Hey, welcome to a new episode of Skin in the Game. This is your host, John Simperman, without my co-host today, Tim O'Shea. Tim's actually traveling and on assignment, but in lieu of Tim being here, I'm actually bringing in two special guests on the episode today. We have Chris Cheney Seymour, the Senior Manager of Sports Strategy and Engagement, as well as Tate Wardlaw, who is the Vice President of Marketing, Communications, and Sponsorship for the Olympic Regional Development Authority. And just for background, for our listeners, the Olympic Regional Development Authority, otherwise known as ORDA, was formed in 1980 to really manage the facilities around the Olympic Games. But since that time, as our guests will discuss, they've really grown into an economic driver for all of the North Country, hosting Olympic trials, hosting Olympic competitions, as well as really driving, I think what we talk about here is adventure tourism. So really looking forward to bringing Chris and Tate onto Skin in the Game. But I did want to, before that, just talk a little bit about the importance of sports tourism. We've had a number of guests on Skin in the Game talking about this emerging category and this emerging industry of sports tourism. But just as kind of reference, a couple relevant events, both, you know, really in New York State, but attracting visitors from across the globe. If you look at Ironman, for example, that's hosted in Lake Placid. That brings in an estimated $15 million of economic impact to the North Country. Even Equestrian, and most recently, the state of New York provided a grant of $6 million to the equestrian venues in and around Lake Placid. Those annual events drive $17 million of economic impact to the Lake Placid region. So that's big business. And as we're going to talk about with our guests here, the infrastructure investments and the continued focus on sport in the Lake Placid region are of great importance. Also, in New York State, upcoming is the Ryder Cup. And here's some really incredible numbers. The Ryder Cup will attract 250,000 visitors from 40 countries during the course of that international golf tournament. The tournament is hosted at Bethpage Black, which is Long Island. And that event alone is looking to drive well over $160 million in economic impact. So again, sport tourism, big business in not only this state, but across the country. And really the last news on the Ryder Cup is it was just recently announced that Black Course will be hosting the 2028 Women's PGA Championship, which is super exciting. And in 2033, the Men's PGA Championship will be hosted at Bethpage Black, again, driving a ton of economic impact and a ton of revenue back into Long Island region. So with that, do stay tuned here to Skin in the Game as I bring in our guests from the Olympic Regional Development Authority, Chris Cheney Seymour and Tate Wardlaw. Please stay tuned.
Hey, football fans, check out the USA Wheelchair Football League Tournament, presented by Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Cheer on our very own Buffalo Bills as they face off with the Patriots, the Cowboys, the Raiders, and the Browns.
Something up, it's picked off!
Head to the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel to stream it now.
Welcome back to Skin in the Game. This is your host, John Simperman, and I am thrilled to introduce not one, but two special guests from the Olympic Regional Development Authority. We have Chris Cheney Seymour, who is the Senior Manager of Sports Strategy and Engagement, also joined by Tate Wardlaw, who is the Vice President of Marketing, Communications, and Sponsorship. Gentlemen, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure, John.
Thanks for having us, John.
First of all, you guys both have my, you both have my dream jobs. You're in the business of sport, and you are living in one of the most beautiful places, I believe, in North America, that being Lake Placid. So I just want to let you know I'm coming after your jobs, okay? Hey, with that, Chris, we'll start with you. You know, give us a little background on what your role is with the Olympic Regional Development Authority, and what was your path to Lake Placid?
So my role within the company is really being responsible for sports strategy and sport development across the entire portfolios within our venues and what we do. That can range from emerging sports to, long-standing sports. And that works with everything from sport development through high performance and elite performance at the Olympic level. And so with that, I too work as kind of the liaison from a sport end within not just community initiatives, but with regional, national, international federations and different governing bodies. And the goal is really to continue strengthening Lake Placid's role as a global hub in sport, while also creating opportunities for the locals and the region.
Wow, that's great.
And for me, the path to coming to Lake Placid wasn't too far. I grew up in this region and have had a long career in sport and recreation and venue design and development. And that career is taking me all around the world, working in other beautiful places. And for me, I came home about 10 years ago, and Lake Placid was on the trajectory for a realignment in what it does with its venues and what its place was going to be in the Olympic movement and global sports, and was happy to join the team again.
Wow, that's great. So Chris, it sounds like you're spending a lot of time, you said emerging sports, legacy sports, and then kind of flipping over to Tate. It sounds like, looking at your title, your job is to help, generate some revenue and around those sports and hopefully make them sustainable, correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. My role essentially is sales, marketing, and revenue. ORTA's mission ultimately has evolved from just taking care of these wonderful venues that have been around since 1932, and most of them more like 1980, to really nurturing sport, as Chris has said, and is Chris's responsibility, but also to generate visitation and revenue dollars, because without the margin, there is no mission. And also to ensure that we as an organization are driving social and economic impact to our region, as well as to those sport communities. So for example, we obviously host a number of programs and entry to sport activities that allow the region to participate in sports that they might not otherwise participate in. But we also help to support those sports that perhaps don't otherwise have a venue to conduct their games, right, and their sports. And so my job is to do all of the stuff that allows Chris to do his job, is really how we slice it up here at the Olympic Authority.
Yeah.
I grew up in sport. I was a ski racer for most of my life, and then became a brand manager in the hard goods and apparel space in alpine ski and winter outdoor. And like Chris, I married into a local family. And as we came back here, working with ORTA, especially after it really committed to the mission that I mentioned and that Chris referenced earlier, it became a wonderful opportunity for me to help support the cause and to stay in sport and to allow all of those folks with whom we engage to have as ideal a sport experience as they possibly can have.
Yeah, that's great. And just for our listeners, so the agency, the ORTA, really was, it came out of the 1980 Olympics, correct? And this was really just managing the facilities, which obviously included the Olympic rinks and the ski hills. But it sounds like the organization has really also kind of evolved quite a bit from there. So if you could just give us a little background on, you know, how things have changed at Orta over the last 20, 30 years.
Hey, you want me to, I'll do a little facility state and you can jump in on the rest. There was a priority to keep the doors open, the lights on, the snow groomed, and to really have that sort of platform in which people could come here and recreate or train or to compete in a multitude of different sports at our venues. And in 2019, 2020, the priority started to change. The state of New York made the decision to make a major investment into Lake Placid as a community, and also to the Olympic venues of Lake Placid and the sister venues at Gore Mountain and in Bel Air. There was a revitalization project that began in Lake Placid. That revitalization project had the goal of bringing every one of the Olympic facilities up to an international standard. And kind of the target at that point was for the World University Games. And so Lake Placid hosted the World University Games in 2023. And in order to host those events, the venues needed to be at that international World Cup, and in some cases to an Olympic level. And so that investment was really significant from the standpoint of the states. And of course, the first bullseye was World University Games, but the eye on the prize was really changing the trajectory of Lake Placid to some extent and moving it from being a legacy site that was keeping the lights on and the doors open to making it an organization that was ready to be a global powerhouse in not just Olympic sport, but in multiple other sports. And that's been something that has really been successful in a lot of ways. And I think, yeah, Tate can jump in on some of that, but it's been really exciting since those revitalizations in 2023.
So with our large hill, the 128 Nordic jumping facility is as state of the art as any Nordic facility anywhere in the world, for example. And our Nordic skiing facility is as state of the art in terms of snowmaking and other things that allow for world-class racing, but also allow for world-class recreation, world-class, you know, learn to ski programs and learn to race programs. And so the reason I use that as an example is that our role is not just now to make sure that these venues look pretty and occasionally are populated by world-class events, but also to make sure that folks from across New York State, the Northeast, the country, and even the world are invited to come here and participate either in an entry-level experience or in a sort of a mid-level experience or in an elite competition experience and have a wonderful time, whether it's an individual who's here for one individual event or it's a team or it's someone that chooses to stay here and spend season after season learning to get better in a alpine ski or a Nordic ski or a sliding sport role, and to make sure that they not only are able to learn their craft, but they feel a great deal of support from coaches, from the venue managers, the staff that serves to make sure that these events are state of the art. And in doing so, that's really what has allowed us to become a facility that all of these sports want to bring their elite World Cup events to year after year, which is a very different set of circumstances than what that was, let's say, 15 or 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll add a little too, John, is that I think some of those differentiators have kind of emerged from that process. We obviously wanted to be able to provide community recreation and lifelong sport opportunities and maintain world-class training and competition environments and drive economic impact, you know, through tourism and events. Those parts of that investment from New York State have played out. Tate mentioned and is also hinting at more of is we went above and beyond in a few ways and took a couple chances. And so one of those is relates to what we can do now with sport in some different ways. So if you or your listeners have ever watched the movie Moneyball, it talks a lot about a transition point of sport analytics and data is example. And so baseball is a sport that relies heavily on those, and professional sports do. But the sports of the Olympic movement, in example, are also moving in that direction. And so the ability to collect, analyze, and look at data for a way that can enhance television broadcasts, the way that it can enhance training environments, or the way that it can really kind of move that needle for U.S. athletes to have that extra edge. And so in our venues, we have, not all of them yet, but have started installing what we would refer to as a dedicated fiber network. So essentially, our venues are becoming spaces that are wired to collect and disseminate information. If that's a global broadcast, it's quite easy. If it's collecting time, if it's collecting high-speed video. So we're coming into this space and partnering with different NGBs and the USOPC on initiatives to really see how we can both enhance, inform, and optimize performance in sport. And so there's been a number of those kinds of initiatives that have come about through it that have really emerged as game changers for our facilities, but also the athletes and federations that use them.
Yeah, it's that's a great kind of segue, because I think for our listeners too, which U.S. Olympic teams are utilizing Lake Placid facilities for training and performance?
So for us, we represent and have ones that we are their home. And so if we are their official training home, or their federation, or their national governing body is here, the sliding sports, so luge, bobsled, skeleton, we are their home. And other sports like biathlon, we are their training home. Sports like cross-country skiing, all of the alpine sports, hockey, curling, there are times in which their national teams are training or competing here in Lake Placid. And for us too, we have also started focusing on supporting other sports that are outside of the winter realm. And Lake Placid since 1980, referred to itself as the winter sports capital of the world. And we're expanding a bit from that. Mountain biking is a space in competition and training we're moving into quite quickly. A lot of the infrastructure that I mentioned and Tate mentioned before is attracted partners like Warner Brothers Sports, UCI World Cup Mountain Biking, and the different world-class teams associated into wanting to be here in Lake Placid in both the competition and training environment. For us too, with our partnership with the U.S. Olympic Paralympic Training Center here in Lake Placid, there's a number of other Olympic national teams that spend time here training within that four-year cycle. It could be rhythmic gymnastics, canoe and kayak, boxing has happened here in the past.
Yeah, that's great. And by the way, I just want to take a step back. I actually had a chance last February to experience the women's jumping, World Cup jumping competition at your venue. You know, obviously the hill is great, but you know, the food and beverage offerings, the merchandising, egress, ingress into the venue really was a great experience. And as a fun kind of side note, I am of Slovenian descent, and it was a young Slovenian who won the jumping competition. And there I was, not knowing a word of Slovenian, standing in the middle of 20 Slovenians, literally from Slovenia, waving their flags. So there's a testament right there to kind of the economic benefit of these venues, because there were folks from Austria, Germany, and in this case, Slovenia, on the side of the hill watching the competition.
I think that fan experience, and that's really Tate's department's realm is also becoming one of those differentiators. Now, Tate, do you have? Yeah, I mean, your crew does a great job with that.
Yeah, talk about that.
Any
venue,
thoughts on
Tate?
That?
Yeah, talk about that venue.
So one of the nice things about the relatively amateur sports that we host on a regular basis is that they are still accessible to fans in general, right? So if you are a Slovenian who wants to go see Nika Previc ski jump, right, you can literally go and stand only feet from where he's going to land in on his jump. If you are a fan of bobsledding or a fan of Nordic skiing, you can come to our venues and in a safe and exciting way stand feet from all of those sports. And then because of the makeup of who winter sports athletes tend to be, when the competition is over, when that bobsled, that four-man bobsled has sailed past you at 75 miles an hour, only 10 feet from where you're standing, you can then walk down the bobsled track and you can literally meet with and talk and high-five with the athletes in a way that you simply can't do in most more conventional, you know, sort of classic pro sports. And we aim to ensure that all of our spectating experiences are equal parts close in proximity to the sport, as well as, you know, warm and comfortable and with plenty of food and bev opportunities and stuff that you can take home as a keepsake. And do it all for, you know, pennies on the dollar compared to a lot of other sports that are out there. So that's a big part of the work that we've put into the Orta experience over the last couple of years. And there's more to come.
Speaking about more to come, and Chris, you alluded to it, emerging sports. Are you seeing, you know, everybody talks about what's the hot next trend, what's the hot next sport, and you know, the answer could be a lot of different things depending who you're asking. But what are you seeing, and what trends are you looking to follow, and maybe, you know, pull into your some of your activities up in Lake Placid?
It's actually really it's an interesting question. And so from the standpoint of, you know, things like esports to privatization of major global events, there's a lot of things that are really interesting that are happening in sport right now. I was recently at a conference with the USOPC, and the keynote speaker said, from professional sport to amateur sport to sports we haven't even thought of, we are moving into the next 10 years of the most exciting decade of sport that has ever happened. And so I think that's something that there are so many pieces that are emerging. And so part of it is the storytelling, you know, where a trail running race that goes up a mountain is maybe not terribly interesting for a lot of people, but it becomes the storytelling that can make that interesting.
Sure.
That storytelling can give the behind the scenes, give biometrics, give analytics, and craft a story. And as I, you know, mentioned to one of our partners with World Cup Mountain Biking is Warner Brothers Sports. And so everything we're doing with them is about telling a story. How do we tell a story in a World Cup mountain bike race that is interesting? Mm-hmm. So it becomes about the technology of the bikes. It becomes about the training, the stories behind the scenes of the athletes, and really trying to make kind of what Tate was saying, and something that we already do really well, is bring spectators and fans as close as possible to those athletes. And so for us, it's, yeah, like I said, it's just a really interesting time to take what have been considered to be fringe sports. And when you take those sports and you start to overlay them with the storytelling, the information, the broadcast quality of larger sports, it starts to make an example. I think something else that's also really interesting is the privatization of these sports. And so for a number of, you know, Olympic sports, an example, track and field They compete within the Diamond League when it's not Olympic. It's all overseen by international federations. But, you know, there have been breakout leagues that have private sponsors that are paying bigger dollars sometimes in win money. They're working outside of the national international federations, and they're giving athletes to compete in their sport in a different way. Sailing with GP Sailing has done some really fascinating things of taking sailing and, one, making it exciting for people that don't know anything about sailing, but telling an incredible story that, you know, they, in just a few years of being active, are, you know, getting huge crowds from Dubai to New York City to Sydney, Australia, coming to watch sailing. And so anyway, I think it's just some of the rules and things are going out the window. Some of the things that have always been done are starting to change, and I'm looking forward to the next 10 years. Our venues are well poised to support that.
I would agree. We're going to take a quick break here on Skin in the Game, and we're going to return to our conversation with Chris Chaney Seymour and Tate Wardlaw from the Olympic Regional Development Authority. And what I want to get back into is what's on the horizon and what's next for a lot of the Lake Placid venues. So stay tuned here on Skin in the Game.
Here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From your morning commute to quiet evenings at home, Buffalo Toronto Public Media is always there. With trusted news, inspiring stories, and timeless music, it's your connection to a world of wonder. This is Public Media.
Welcome back to Skin in the Game. I'm here with Chris Chaney Seymour and Tate Wardlaw from the Olympic Regional Development Authority. You know, what I wanted to dive into, gentlemen, was, you know, the economic impact. I mean, obviously the state of New York invested, you know, quite a bit into upgrading the facilities over the last 10 plus years. But what I kind of found doing some homework on the organization is roughly $342 million, I think was reported as far as economic impact in return to the region. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, the investment and the ROI that's coming out of these investments?
Sure, John. Thanks for asking that question. You're right in that our economic impact to the region from a direct input into the local economy is well in excess of $375 million. And our expectation is that our next independent audit will show that number to be closer to $500 million a year. That's throughout the Catskills and the Adirondacks. Now, it doesn't take into consideration the secondary impact that happens through travel and additional returning visits and things like that that are associated with the area.
Yeah. Tate, we throw out economic return from these events, and, you know, people, it's almost sometimes people don't understand where that research and where that data comes from, but we're talking heads and beds, we're talking jobs, we're talking food and beverage, hospitality, shopping, right? I mean, just where does that number come from and how is it calculated?
That number includes all of the money that's spent in the region in association with our events and our programs. So that means paying staff who have jobs. That means hotels, and that means short-term rentals, food and bev, shopping, other travel assists, things of that nature. So yes, it's really remarkable that much money flows into the area and accounts for literally thousands of jobs across the region.
Well, you'll be happy to know I've contributed to that. So, and we'll continue to, because it's, but again,
good job, John.
Yeah, no, visiting there for whether it's a pond hockey tournament or watching the, you know, the ski jumping. Yeah, I've done my best to contribute to the North Country economy. let's talk a little bit about some of the events that are driving those numbers. If you could just kind of give us some a preview, and I do want to talk about the UCI World Cup, because that sounds like an event that needs to be experienced. So just, Chris, if you could just give us a preview of what's on the horizon in Lake Placid.
That begins with this year, and we have multiple World Cup events, multiple region events, and I think to the point we've been talking about is that sport tourism, event tourism is really important here in Lake Placid. It's not just if you're coming here and you're getting to experience through watching. We also have lots of opportunities where people can experience by doing. And so in kind of going through that, an example, our next World Cup coming up is World Cup mountain biking. Sounds like we'll talk a little more detail on that, but we have other things like a World Cup luge event. We have World Cup cross-country skiing coming. We're poised to do some really interesting things for people. And so if you take World Cup cross-country skiing, which this year it's going to be season finals as well, that event for individuals, they can come and be a fan. They can see an experience. They can see their heroes. They can discover something new, but they can also go cross-country skiing. And that idea of that you can come and experience things and then you can turn around, you can get a ski lesson, you can learn how to do that thing. I mean, it's like if you went to a NHL game and once the pros left the ice, you could go out and do a learn to skate, shoot a puck, and like see what that's all about. And that's something that is possible through everything we do. It's true for curling, luge, bobsled, skeleton, mountain biking, and is really unique to our venues. We're definitely in a growth phase right now as it relates to international events. And so between hosting World Cups, World Cup finals, or World Championships, we are doing that across the board of all the Olympic sports that we work with, and also with World Cup mountain biking. We're also talking with and interested in other events. Those events could be a number of different things. It could be adaptive sports. There's from the international and the IOC level, there's World Cups and large events that relate to adaptive sports. There's other things like the Deaf Olympics and events like that that are quite interesting that bring sort of a new population to this part of the world. And I think too is really looking at emerging sports. I brought up, you know, trail sports before, and again, which probably a lot of your listeners wouldn't feel like they're on the edge of their seats thinking about trail sports, but it's also when you take out professional sports, Premier League soccer and NFL football and all of those, trail sports are one of the fastest emerging broadcastable sports that are being picked up by different networks. And so where it was nearly impossible 5 years ago to watch a trail sport in a streaming platform, platforms like, you know, HBO Max are bringing cycling and running much closer to the viewer and telling those things. And so it's, I think that's interesting. Another thing that's happening in sort of non-professional sports or non-traditional American is talent transfer is also something that is really interesting that we're focusing on supporting, helping, and making those connections. And so an example, Lolo Jones, who is a very famous track and field athlete, who was an NCAA champion at LSU, multiple Olympic track and field appearances. She's now is also a world-class bobsledder. And so I think those are also, I think, things that are emerging, interesting, and coming forward.
So you talked about trail sports, and I believe mountain biking would fall into that, correct?
Correct. Yeah, of course.
You know, there was and is growth in that sport as far as, you know, casual participation. And, you know, it's a sport that I think does have upside. And, you know, it's almost, you know, it's got a little bit of X Games to it. It's got a little bit of rock and roll to it, obviously high adrenaline. So I'm very bullish, like you, on where mountain biking can go. But it sounds like, you know, not only are you investing in bringing those events there like UCI, but also, you know, bringing more of that kind of adventure tourism to the region as well, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think having year-round viability is obviously quite important. And so mountain biking, depending on where you live, is a year-round sport. And it's, of course, a sport both in recreation and in training and competition that many mountain towns use their infrastructure. And so similar to other places, Lake Placid is really well poised for that. So specific to the World Cup event, Mount Van Hovenberg serves as the cross-country World Cup site. And so that is two events that happen. There's the XCO and the XCC is what they call it. So the XCC is kind of like a sprint event. And so they ride a shorter course. It's great for the fans to watch. The race itself doesn't last terribly long, but it's really an event of tactics. And it's like I said, hosted at Mount Van Hovenberg. The cross-country skiing infrastructure from a broadcast standpoint to the actual trails are part of that. And then the XCO event is a longer distance race. It's a multi-lap race. And within that, there are all sorts of features. There's rock gardens, jumps, et cetera. As you said, it's a little bit rock and roll. It's a lot of adrenaline. And in that case, it's also a lot of lactic acid because you have athletes that are really pushing the cardiovascular boundaries.
Right.
And the event is really exciting. And,
yeah.
And for us, too, on the other side, is downhill. So this year we have downhill mountain biking at Whiteface Mountain, which is from our partners in sport, who've been coming here to inspect and test the courses, have referred to it as epic and adrenaline and massive. And so I think we're doing a pretty good job on representing the sport on that side. And what that will bring is, again, the best downhill mountain bikers in the world.
Yeah.
The U23 and Elite, world-class teams, and they will put on a great show there.
Yeah.
Generally, the downhill crowds are larger than the cross-country crowds. And, and we're pairing those things with a really good show. And I think Tate and I have both kind of talked about, and I'll let Tate expound a little bit what we're doing on the other side, is that we really prioritize creating and giving the best experience we can to everyone. And from a sports standpoint, like inside the fence, the athletes, the officials, the coaches, the techs, is for us, we are very intentional in giving them the best experiences possible and the best competition venue possible. That the thing that we are working really hard to in the space of World Cup mountain biking is differentiating ourselves from others. And part of that is building out a fan experience that is also world-class. And some of that happens at the venue and some of it happens out. And I'm about to swim past my depth here and I'm going to let Tate take that on here. Because he and his team are in many ways the masterminds of those things.
Yeah, Tate, give us the fan experience. So give us the overview of what they could expect. And just for our listeners, because this episode of Skin in the Game is being recorded prior to the UCI coming to Lake Placid, which will be October 2nd through 5th. So what can fans expect?
That's a great question, John. So mountain biking, as Chris just alluded to, is in this competitive setting is so much more than watching mountain bikers pedal along a trail or sort of one after another. It really is a combination of the most dynamic athletes out there mixed with a little bit of, I guess I would say, stock car racing on something that doesn't look all that different from a like a freestyle snowboard course or something along those lines. So you have these guys who are literally the most elite endurance sports athletes in the world going head to head in the cross country event. They literally are going head to head, rubbing each other, you know, over rolls, jumps, rock gardens, steep climbs, big bank turns, and things like that. All while the spectators are standing, again, only feet from watching these guys do it. The wonderful thing about this specific event is that it's on a multiple lap course. So these guys will do anywhere from 7 to 10 laps on this course. So you don't really need to worry about whether you're sitting in the right place to watch these guys, because these guys keep coming back to you. All while a music is, you know, a band is playing in the background, food and beer are being served basically right at your left or your right. And then if that's not enough, you can literally go into the paddock and watch them get ready for the race, or to cool off after the race, or ask them how they felt their race was, mm-hmm. or how terrifying was that, or what about that guy that knocked you off your bike? So it's really a way for spectators to feel intimately involved in the race in the case of the cross country event.
Yeah.
The downhill event is almost as I guess I would say intimate. We obviously give the athletes a little bit more room between the fence line where the fans are and the significant features that are part of the course build that these guys will sail down. But again, live music, Jumbotron, so that you can see every aspect of the course regardless of where you're standing, and athletes that just love to hang out with the fans before and after the race.
Yeah, well, it really reminds me of kind of that X Games, or dating myself, Gravity Games, you know, fan experience. And this, correct me if I'm wrong, this is men and women's competition. And how do our athletes here in the United States, how do we stack up against the best in the world?
That's a great question. So we, and I will add to our neighbors to the north in Canada, right now in the World Cup, are among some of the best. And so this is a sport. World Cup mountain biking and mountain biking in general was, for all intents and purposes, born in the US, in California to Colorado. The first World Championships took place in Colorado in the late 80s. And in the last few years, the some of the legends of the sport that are emerging are from the U.S. And so on the women's side in cross country, there are a number of women who could be a medal winner any given day. Haley Batten, who's from Park City, Utah, was a silver medalist in the Paris Olympics. And I mean, from that side, anything can happen. From the men's side in cross country, the current World Cup leader is Christopher Blevins. He's from Durango, Colorado. He is potentially going to be able to clinch the overall World Cup title while he's in Lake Placid, which would be something that is, yeah, unique to the sport entirely. From the U.S. side, there is competing from the downhill side. There's a number of up-and-coming U.S. riders that are in men and women that are doing quite well. Aaron Gwynn, who is the second most winning World Cup downhill men's athlete of all time, will be competing here in Lake Placid. He, the last time a World Cup took place in downhill in the U.S. in Wyndham, and a little below us in New York, Aaron won the event, and so it would be lovely if that could happen again. But also right now, the Canadians are doing a great job. Jackson Goldstone is leading overall in men's downhill. Their Canadian downhill women riders are are racing fast right now, and in the cross country side, they have some up and coming riders that have been not just knocking on the door, but landing on the podium in the last few weeks. So it's, I think for anyone coming from North America, there's going to be some great fans to be cheering on.
That's great. Now, this is the only, correct me if I'm wrong, this is the only North American stop for the UCI tour, correct?
So this year it is, it's here in Lake Placid, and then the following weekend it's in Mount Ste. Anne in Quebec. So okay. just outside of Quebec City, there will also be downhill and cross country World mm-hmm. Cup.
And what is the bid process? Because you mentioned Colorado, you mentioned California, Pacific Northwest. I'm sure these regions would love to host these events. So what is the RFP or the bid process look like?
Well, John, some of them are also going to be hosting them next year too. Mm-hmm. So some of that, like that greater bid question of events, some of it is at one level the prioritization of the international federations or those who are controlling, and they often have a market that they're interested in being in. And for the last couple of decades, the majority of cycling, not just mountain biking, but all cycling sports, have really been centralized to Central European countries. And World Cup mountain biking is making a decisive decision to expand. And so that expansion is going toward Asia, and it's going toward North America. And so next year, there will be not just stops here in Lake Placid, but they will also be going to Park City and Heber Valley, Utah for World Cups. And they will also be holding a downhill at Whistler in British Columbia. And so there's other potential expansion sites in the following years that are being discussed in North America and creating a bigger step there. Similar to us using Olympic venues, the first expansion towards Asia is happening in South Korea. And so the cross country and downhill venues that were used for the Olympic Games during Pyeongchang are going to be activated for World Cup mountain biking.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, so for us, part of it's that end. The next part is in any bid process is the venue opening with the federation or the governing body, that conversation. And so depending on the sport, there can be sort of a long lead on protocol, procedures, and steps you need to take. Other sports, I think, are a little more aggressive and come toward new sites more quickly. And so World Cup mountain biking, being a sport that's expanding, is they're interested in places that are iconic, are beautiful, are good production partners, and have a demonstrated ability to host events at a world-class level and also draw large crowds. And it's,
Sounds like you have those boxes checked. just a question here regarding, you know, the support of the sport among Canadians as well. And Tate, maybe this is more directed to you, but, you know, we here in Western New York, where Skin in the Game is hosted, we are seeing Canadian tourism down. Do you have any concerns? Because to me, Lake Placid is a perfect location for both U.S. as well as Canadian fans. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Are friends up north gonna come visit us in Lake Placid?
That's a great question, John. It's obviously been a concern for the entire state, because our Canadian friends represent a great deal of visitation, right? And we obviously enjoy their company immensely. So that's been a concern for, you know, almost the entire year. What we've seen thus far, though, is that our visitation from the Canadians is not down at all. In fact, participation at our venues, ski ticket and season pass sales this coming year is at the same level that it was last year. And our expectation is that because we focus on delivering what I guess I would call a real international sport experience, it becomes really clear that our intentions are truly international, right? They're truly universal. And I think that at the end of the day, some of the concerns that we see from our Canadian neighbors tend to dissolve when they think about wanting to participate in things that are transcendent of political borders, so to speak, mm-hmm. right? So people still want to ski. They still want to watch the best mountain bikers, lugers, bobsledders, Nordic skiers in the world compete. And then our greater community, very much like Western New York, is wholly committed to delivering a wonderful experience and frankly nurturing a friendship with not just our Canadian friends but all of our international friends. And so we're very blessed in that we haven't seen a down trend at all in visitation from our Canadians, and we're grateful for it.
That's great to hear. And I want to thank both of you for joining us here on Skin in the Game. I also want to encourage our listeners, both on both sides of the border. If you're a fan of high energy, if you're a fan of adrenaline, and it sounds like even some rock and roll, make your way to Lake Placid for October 2nd through 5th for the UCI, kind of the World Cup mountain biking and downhill. It sounds like a marvelous event. And I want to again thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tate, for spending some time today with us.
It's our pleasure, John.
Thank you so much, John.
Great conversation, which I really think reinforces the impact sport has on local economies and local quality of life. I think what really stood out for me is the investment that New York State has made in those facilities over the last 10 years. And according to Chris Cheney Seymour, our guest, really driving over $350 million a year into that region economy. That's jobs, that's taxes, and that's hopefully future guests. So look forward to being back next week with my co-host, Tim O'Shea. This is a production of Buffalo Toronto Public Media. Thanks for listening.